Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Dalet and Shkalim. We are in Gimel Medbeis, and we're starting from the Mishnah on the top of the Amud, what the it's called here in the Yerushalmi, the Halacha Gimel. We are going over the course of Adar and discussing exactly how we're going to be collecting the Machzis HaShekel. There's a mitzvah for every Jew to provide, to give a half a shekel to the base of Mikdash annually. We discussed already from day one. This is now the third day of our discussion, the Masechta. The purpose of the bringing the Machzis HaShekel so that we can provide the operations for the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is going to have an operating budget due to the fact that it has to bring a karban, at least two karbanos a day, and then on Shabbos even more, and on Yontif even more, and that's just the karbanos. And then, of course, there's the fuel to burn the karbanos and a whole other host of expenses that are necessary. So therefore, there has to be an operating budget. And there has to be a collection based on the fact that the Jews are going to give. Furthermore, and also another fundamental point is that the purpose of collection, the bringing of the Machzis HaShekels, is that every Jew has participation in the carbon. Meaning, the carbon is a carbon seabor. It's a communal carbon. It's brought for Klal Yisrael as a community, not as individuals. And so, therefore, when everyone contributes the Machzis HaShekels, he becomes his mishtatev. He participates now in the carbon seabor. So with all that stated, so what we've been discussing now is the process in which it's collected. We already described that the first day of Adar, 30 days prior to the new fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash. So the first day of Adar, so the announcement started going out. And people were notified it's time to think about giving the Machzis HaShekel because in 1 month's time the money has to be here. The Mishnah goes on to describe how on the 15th day, so everyone got much more serious. So on day one of Adar, we just simply made announcements, and on day 15 already, the shluchei basin, the messengers of basin, are going out and around, and really encouraging people to give. The Mishnah over here is a continuation. We are discussing exactly that point. On the 15th day of Adar, so now you had the table changers. The table changers, the money changers, were basically the ones who collected. They were the collectors. Now, they would go out, says the Mishnah, to the Medina. The Medina, not exactly clear what that means in the Mishnah. Medina could just simply mean the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Medina could just also mean the country as well, to the entire country. Not totally clear what that means, but nevertheless, already money changers would go out and be accepting money from people. Bechafei Yashu B'Mikdash, now on the 25th day of Adar, which is now 5 days away, from the new fiscal year, so they would already be in the Mikdash. Mishiyashu b'Mikdash itchilu l'mashkein. Now, once the money changers moved from the Medina to the Beis HaMikdash, the area of the Mikdash, so now we would be mamashkein. In other words, on the first day of Adar, it was a reminder. On the 15th day of Adar, you had money changers coming in, accepting collections. And then on the 25th day of Adar, 10 days later, so now they got very serious, and they would start being mamashkin. The idea of being mamashkin means is that they would collect. And if people weren't interested in giving or needed a little extra push, so they would take collateral from people. This is the idea of mamashkin. It's clear from our Mishnah, from our Gemara, that they had really a very strong power in terms of collecting that money, even to the point where they could seize your assets. So as me mamashkin, so who would they go after? So, yeah, how exactly they kept accounting?
Yes.
So I don't know. That we're not given much information about. Meaning, the Mishnah. It was like an IRS. Meaning, they did keep. They must have kept some sort of accounting record. I mean, must be. So, but the Mishnah doesn't explain. So in Mima Mashkenin, so who would they go after? Levim v'Yisrael began v'avadim v'shuchorim. So basically they would go after Jews. I mean, to make a long Mishnah shorter. And the Mishnah just simply divides, compartmentalizes. And you'll see why in just a moment the Mishnah divides. But they go after Levim and Yisraelim and Gerim. Gerim are Jews. Avadim v'shuchorim. Freed slaves. Freed slaves is another way of saying a convert. Once a slave is freed, he becomes a bona fide, a full-fledged Jew. But who they don't go after is they don't go after women, slaves, and minors. The Mishnah says, look, in terms of kids and collecting from kids, So the father can take it upon himself that, you know, I have a kid and he's going to give a machzis a shekel. You know, let's start him young. So he starts giving on behalf of his child. We have not yet even talked about what age the child we're talking about. We'll come to that point later this morning. So the Mishnah says that once you got into the habit of giving on behalf of your child in a posek, you shouldn't stop. Meaning, even though the child is not fundamentally obligated, but the Mishnah says that once you're in the habit of providing for him or providing on his behalf, so you should continue doing so. We'll come back and discuss later this morning the idea of the child having to give machzis a shekel altogether. Now, how about taking collateral from Kohanim? Okay. Now, the Kohanim and their obligation to give the machzis a shekel, as we'll see in just a moment in the Mishnah, so that's subject to a debate, a major debate, whether a Kohen has an obligation to give a machzis a shekel or not. So let's just take a global look first at this, and then we'll go back to the Mishnah. Do the Kohanim have to give machzis a shekel? So the simplest answer would be yes. Why not? Meaning they're part of the Jewish people. The purpose of the machzis a shekel is so that there would be a full representation of all the Jewish people to bring a karban. So Kohanim, what makes them different? So at face value, there really should be no difference between Kohanim versus anybody else, meaning Levim or Yisraelim. So the simplest answer would be yes. As we'll see over the course of our Mishnah and our Gemara, maybe the argument could be, without getting too detailed or too technical, the argument could just simply be, look, they work there. Meaning, I understand you're collecting from quote-unquote outsiders. Outsiders meaning people who are not employed by the Beis HaMikdash, people who don't work for the Beis HaMikdash. But Kohanim work there, so they don't have to pay. So that's a very simplistic way to explain any argument, if there is one, in terms of why Kohanim don't have to pay. So the Mishnah, rather than dealing with the direct question of do they need to give machzis shekel or not, so the Mishnah attacks it from the standpoint of, well, do we take a mashkon from them? Meaning, do we take collateral from them to encourage / force them to pay? So the Mishnah says no. Ein mashkon esa kohanim imei darchei shalom because of darchei shalom. Now, when the Mishnah says darchei shalom, so you know what it sounds like. It sounds like really it's the right thing to do, but we want to make good with the Kohanim, we want to make nice with the Kohanim. So don't do it because you don't want to ruffle any feathers. That's what the Mishnah sounds like. But it does sound like from the Mishnah that fundamentally they're obligated. Am Rav Yehuda Haid ben Bukhri Biyavnim. Kokon Shishokol Einu Chote. So Rav Yehuda testifies in the name of Ben Bukhri that if a Kohen decides that he wants to give a machzis a shekel, he's not a sinner. Now, I know that language is a little bit strange. You got to think it through what that means. If he gives a machzis a shekel, he's not a sinner. What does that sound like? It sounds like he doesn't have to give. He's under no obligation to give. But if he does so, okay, einu chote. He's not a sinner. So amalo Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai lo ki ela kol kohen sheino shokol chote. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says I go the other way, meaning if a kohen doesn't give, he is a sinner. Or, let's put it in other terms, in simpler terms, meaning he's got to give. Kohen is obligated to give. So in other words, so what we have basically in our Mishnah is two opinions. The opinion of Ben Bukhri, quoted by Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Kohen is under no obligation to give. If he wants to voluntarily give, he may do so, but he's not obligated to do so. Versus the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who says, no, Kohen has to give. Kohen's no different. So here we have the machlokas in the Mishnah between Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Ben Bukhra as to whether or not a Kohen needs to give. Ela shakohanim dorshim mikra zela atzman. Now, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I know there's an undercurrent amongst the Kohanim. I know that they think they don't need to give. They're wrong. But at least I understand why they think that way. Why? V'chol minchas kohen kalil tiyeh lo tochal. And here's their argument. This is their justification for not giving. They think, well, you know that there are halachas regarding a mincha where the halacha is going to depend on whether you're a kohen or whether you're a non-kohen. Okay, let's take it from the vantage point of a non-kohen. If I'm a non-kohen, which I happen to be, and I were to give a mincha to the Beis HaMikdash, mincha is a flower offering, so what happens to the mincha? The kohen takes a handful of the mincha, throws it up onto the mizbech. That's the chelak of the mizbech, the portion of the mizbech. And what happens to the shirayim, the leftovers of the mincha? It's eaten by kohanim. Okay, it falls under the category of kashim. Kashim, it's upper level carbon, and it's eaten by the kohanim. Kohanim sit and eat it, and they have to eat it in the azara in the temple courtyard. Good. That's what happens if I bring a mincha. What happens if a kohen brings a mincha? So that you don't need to know Torah Shabbat Peh. It says in the Torah. The Gemara quotes the pasuk, "Kol minchas kohen kalil tiyeh lo sochal." If a kohen gives a mincha, so then the mincha is totally burnt. There is no shiraim. There's no portion that's left over. Whether kmitza is done, if I remember correctly, I hope I remember correctly, kmitza is done. Kohen does take a fistful and throws it onto the mizbech, and then what the kohen does is he takes the remainder and also throws it on the mizbech. Okay. Wait one second. Let me first finish the argument, and then I'll take a question. So so that's the difference between whether a kohen brings a mincha versus a non kohen bring a mincha. Good. So what Rabbi Yochanan Mezakis is explaining is, here's their rationalization. They rationalize and they say, well, we can't contribute to the machatzis hashekel because think about it, we're going to give money to the Beis Hamikdash so the Beis Hamikdash can buy karbanos. Of the karbanos that they're buying over the course of the year, there also is going to be menachos that are brought, carbon menachos that are brought. Notably, shtei lechem that's brought on Shavuos, lechem upon him that's brought weekly, and the omer which is brought on the second day of Pesach. So those are all menachos that are brought for the tzibur. So the Cohen's argument is, now imagine if they take my money. They take my money to buy that. So then that means that becomes now a mincha brought with kohen money. A mincha that is bought by a kohen has to be totally burnt. It's a pasuk in the Torah. It's a lav. It's a negative prohibition. So how can the kohen saying to himself, how can I give money towards the tzibur, towards the communal funds, and some of them, and perhaps there's a chance that my money is now going to be used to the purchasing of a mincha, and then what we're going to do is we're going to eat the mincha? No way. So the Kohanim therefore justify and rationalize on their behalf that they're under no obligation to give. It's a campaign. Yeah, Henry.
Well, I thought you're taking a fraction of that and saying that fraction of shekel is not going to go to that. So.
Right, well, what we're going to end up saying, although the Gemara doesn't say it as the way I'm going to say it, but basically what we're going to end up saying is they're wrong. Meaning, it's a justification, it's rationalization. And the reason why they're wrong is because once that money goes to communal funds, it's no longer Kohen money. It's communal money. Meaning there's a total transference of that money. The status of the money changes from being money of a Kohen to the money of the tzibur. So it's simply a rationalization. Now, did the Kohen believe this to be so, or did they just simply rationalize? It's the way the Mishnah presents the opinion of Rav Yochanan Zakkai. It sounds, I don't know, right? Maybe they legitimately thought that this is the reason why they can't give. But they feel that they're under no obligation to give. So again, the Mishnah says, as far as the Kohen giving, the machitz is a shekel. Machlokis in the Mishnah between Rav Yehuda testifying in the name of Ben Bukhri says that they don't have to give. They can if they want to, but they don't have to. And Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, no, they have to give. And Rav Yochanan Zakkai then goes on to explain, and I know why they rationalize in terms of why they don't give, but truth be told is that they're obligated to give. Well, Rav Yochanan Zakkai experienced the Chorban. He lived during the destruction of the Second Temple. So
how can the others come and say
this? I don't know. It sounds like from the Mishnah that the Kohanim didn't give. In other words, that's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. Whether they're right or wrong is subject to a debate.
I don't know.
Ein mamashkin es ketanim. The Gemara starts off, we don't take a mashkin from minors. So halad bo tovin. So the Gemara says, okay, what do you see from the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, here's what we don't do for a minor. We don't take collateral from him. What does that sound like? The fact that we're even having such a discussion sounds like they can give, just don't take collateral from them. Right? That's the tone of the Mishnah. To which the Gemara says, Hadad de tema b'shehevi shtei sa'aros. Avalim lo hevi be sa'aros lo. Lo bida. Okay, so the Gemara makes a very, very basic distinction. That's the following. Yes, a minor can give. But that's after he's hevi shtei sa'aros, that's after he's physically mature. But before physical maturity, meaning he's a minor, he's a katan, so then there's nothing. Meaning, obviously, we're not going to take a mashkan from him. But even more than that, He has no. He's under no obligation to give. So basically, the way the Gemara is presenting it, it sounds like we can break up the child's. Well, let me just read a little bit more, and then we'll summarize. Ol amashkin eim amashkinin. So afa pi shehevi beisa aros. So in other words, so when the Mishnah says that we don't take a mashkon, that means that even though he is physically mature, in other words, he's 13 years of age, he's physically mature, so then he can give, but at that point in time, we don't take a mashkon. So the Gemara goes on to explain, keni masnisen, okay, these are terminologies that we're just simply not familiar with. So keni masnisen, ein mamashkon es kohanim in mederech akavon. Let's stop over here. All right, so what do we have? What do we have in the Gemara? We have in the Gemara that when it comes to a minor, meaning he's under 13 years of age, he has no obligation to give whatsoever, period. Fine. Then once he turns 13 years of age, he's obligated to give, but there's no mashkan, meaning then they don't come after him, they don't take collateral from him. And then the Mishnah doesn't say this, but then when he arrives at 20 years of age... Yeah. Then when he arrives at 20 years of age, so then he's under full obligation to give, including the mashkin taken away. Why 20? In other words, what's the significance of 20 years of age? So on the simplest level, of course, 20 years of age means that he's not just an adult, but he's an adult with a little bit of maturity. But more basic than that, more fundamental than that, is that's what the Torah says. In other words, the Torah, when describing, when introducing us to this idea of the machatzis shekel, the Torah says that we do so for Ben Esrim Shana V'mala, for anyone 20 years of age and older. So there is in the mitzvah of Machatzis HaShekel, there's kind of like an adolescent period, right? Adolescence is a modern terminology, right? There's no idea of adolescence in the Torah. But when it comes to the giving of the Machatzis HaShekel, so there's some sort of middle stage. Before you're a gadol, you have no obligation to give whatsoever. From 13 to 20, you have an obligation to give, but they're not going to take the collateral from you. And then once you arrive at 20 years of age, so then you have a full obligation to give, including them coming to you and taking a mashkon from you. Okay, that's how it would come out from the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Heid, Amar Rav Brechia, Taima de Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Zeyitnu. Okay, can we give some rationale, some explanation for Ben Zakkai? For Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Gemara says Zeyitnu. The Torah introducing us to the parsha of the giving of the shekel says zeh, you know, you have to give, and the zeh in gematria, that's a seven, that's a five, yud be shvatim yitnu. That's all twelve tribes have to give, and including that, of course, would be the Levim, and including that, of course, would be the Kohanim. Rav Tevi b'shem Rav Hamnuna kein mashivin chachamim leRabbi Yehuda. This is the response to Rav Yehuda, meaning basically, what was Rav Yehuda's viewpoint on our Mishnah? They don't have to give. So the Gemara says, this is an attack on their position. Chatas yachid mesa. Ein chatas tzibor mesa. Minchas hayachid kreva kalo. Vein minchas tzibor kreva kalo. There's a basic difference between an individual versus a community. When an individual gives, so, it's like, for example, chatas tzibor. I'm sorry. A chatas yachid. When an individual brings the karmen chatas, so under certain circumstances, if the chatas is no longer needed, chatas is going to be put to death. This is what's called the chatas amesa. If a community brings a karmen chatas, ein chatas tzibor mesa, there is no halacha that under certain circumstances the chatas of its tzibor is put to death. Right? We don't have that by a chatas tzibor. So in other words, there's a very basic difference between individual versus community. And when the Kohanim are giving money, that money then rolls into communal funds, that's no longer a Kohen's money, like we said back in the Mishnah. So, and that's not only true regarding the Karban Chatas, it's also true regarding a Mincha as well. A Kohen's individual Mincha, that has to be burnt totally on the Mizbeach. A communal Mincha does not need to be burnt on the Mizbeach. This is... the Chacham's response to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the Gemara says almost like parenthetically, you know, it's not right. It's not fair. You're asking a question against Rabbi Yehuda. First of all, can we go over Rabbi Yehuda's own viewpoint? V'kashya meshivim la'adam davasheina modabo? Meaning, how can you attack somebody and the premise of your attack is something that he doesn't even agree to? Meaning, When you're arguing with somebody and trying to prove a point, so you start on common ground. You and I agree to this, or if you agree to that, so then you got to agree with me on this as well. Okay, that's how you debate, and that's a good method of debate. But if you're debating with somebody and you don't even have any common ground which you stand on, well, you got to agree with me here because of this point over here, and he doesn't even agree with you with your premise. So then there's no then the debate doesn't even get off the ground. And the Gemara basically parenthetically says that's basically what's happening over here. The Chachamim say to Rav Yehuda, you know, there's a difference between an individual chatas versus communal chatas. And since there's a difference over there, there's also going to be a difference between an individual and communal mincha. And the Gemara notes, Rav Yehuda doesn't even agree with the premise. So, Kashi, Meshiv La'adam, Davar Sheinam, Modebo, Denan Shein Chata Sibor, Mesa, Rav Yehuda Amar Tamus. Rav Yehuda says that even a Chata Sibor, under certain circumstances, is left to die. So, it's like the Gemara kind of like scratching its head, wondering, how is this any form of debate if Rav Yehuda doesn't even agree to the premise? Okay. Parentheses over. Back to the dialogue. V'hu most of lan, Zulo Nidvas Yachid, That's not nidvas yachid. That's not the donation of an individual. The inun most mitzivan lay, and they respond to him. Kem shenim so letzibor kemishu nidvas tzibor. Basically, and this is exactly the point. Once they give their private money to the tzibor, that's no longer considered their money. It's now considered the communal money, and therefore, it's okay. Not only okay, it's obligated for the kohen to give the machitzas a shekel. Okay, Adkan, that's the end of that dialogue. The Gemara just goes over one other way to look at this machlokus between Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Yehuda. Ksiv kola over al hapakudim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. The Gemara quotes the pasuk, anyone who goes over al hapakudim, what does that mean, pakudim? Or, and what does it mean, he was over, he passed over? So, choramar, kol da avar biyama, yitain. So anyone who passed over, meaning anyone who passed over the sea, meaning all the Jewish people, that passed over the sea, so they have an obligation to give. V'chadna omer, I think I'm reading it right. Kol da'avar al pikudaya yitain. Anyone who's counted in the census, they need to give. And anyone who is not counted in the census, they don't need to give. We know the Levim were not counted in the census. So man da amar kol da avar biyama yitain misayel Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and the Gemara just simply says, look, this is gonna just go right along party lines. The one who says anyone who goes through Yom Suf has to give, that goes like Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who says that everyone has to give, including Kohanim. And man da amar kol da avar pikudaya yitain misayel ben Bukhri, and anyone who says that's counting the census has to give. So then obviously would exclude the Kohanim as they're not counted in the census.
17-year-olds were counted in the census?
Huh? 17-year-olds were counted in the census. No, that goes back to our previous point, meaning that's why once you're 20 years of age, then and only then do you have the full obligation to give. Under 20, you have like a quasi-obligation to give. But then and only then are you obligated to give. Okay, can I ask a simple question? Levim weren't counted in the census at all, meaning not just the Kohanim, right? Levim as well weren't counted. So why then? Yeah. So why does the Mishnah say that this whole machlokus between Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Ben Buchra is only revolving around the Kohanim? Isn't the case that the Levim as an entire tribe weren't counted? And if the whole basis of them not having to pay is because they weren't part of the count, so then it wouldn't just be limited to the Kohanim. It'd be true by all Sheva Levi. Okay. I asked that as a question. I don't have a suggestion. Fine. Okay. Mind you, by the way, in the Mishnah, it's not a question, because in the Mishnah, it's not predicated on the census. In the Mishnah, it's all predicated on the Kohen's Mincha. The Kohen's Mincha needs to be burnt. So then you understand very easily the difference between the Kohanim versus the Levim. But if it's based on the census, so I don't really understand what the difference would be. I raise it as a question. I don't have a suggestion. We are on to the next mission. We're on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Afa Pishar Mer Mimashke Nashim Va'avadim V'Ketanim Avalim Shaklu Mekabel Miyadam. Okay. Women, slaves, and minors. They don't have to give, but they can. So the Mishnah tells us that we're not going to, the shluchei beis din, messengers of beis din, are not going to take a mashkon from them, they're not going to take collateral from them, but if they want to give, they may do so. Now, as far as the Nachri and the Kusi is concerned, so ein mekabel mehem, in other words, there, they don't even have an ability to give, they cannot give. The ein mekabel miyadam, and here's what we do not accept from them. Now, it sounds like we're talking about the last two people we just mentioned, the Nachri and the Kusi. We don't accept from them kine zavim, the kine zavos, the birds that come from a zava or a zava, kine yoldo, so the birds that come from a woman who just gave birth, chatos v'ashamos, karmen chatos, karmen asham, zehaklal. This is the general rule. Now, before I get to the zehaklal, that was very difficult to understand, and I'll explain why. Because the Mishnah just said, or so women, so if they want to volunteer and give, they may. Comes to Kusi and Nachri. Now, I know I didn't explain what Kusi was. I kind of assumed that we all know. I'll go over who the Kusi are in just a moment. It's coming up in today's daf. But the Kusi and the Nachri, so they can't give. They can't give the machitzes the shekel. And not only can they not give the machitzes the shekel, but they can't also give any of these karbanos. You're hearing how strange that is? Meaning, a Kusi may or may not be a Jew. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes from now. A Nachri is not a Jew. Period. A Nachri may volunteer to give a Shlamim or Na'ula. We'll talk about that in just a moment as well. A Nachri has no obligation to bring a Karban Yoledis, meaning, right, the non-Jewish woman gives birth. So she has something called a Karban Yoledis. I mean, she could bring it, she could call it a Karban Yoledis, but it's not. A carbon yoledes only comes from a Jew. I mean, meaning just the idea that it's even a carbon yoledes altogether, or kine zavin, or kine zavos, they only come from Jews. So the idea that the Mishnah says, you know, they don't bring a kine zav, kine zava. It's very difficult to understand how the Mishnah reads if we're talking about the Nachri. Could be that that line is not going on the Nachri, it's going on the Kusi. Could be. But again, it's a difficult line of Mishnah to read. Zehaklal kol she'nidav v'nidav mekablan miyadam, kol she'enu nidav v'nidav ein mekablan miyadam. Anything which could be offered as a voluntary offering, that could be accepted from them. Again, the simple pshan, the Mishnah, is that it's talking about the Kusi and the Nachri. But anything which is not voluntary cannot be accepted from them. V'chein mefurish al yidei Ezra, and then the Gemara quotes from Ezra as follows. Shenemar, Lo lachem v'lanu livnos beis leilokeinu. Ezra speaking to the locals, some of the local non-Jewish residents of Yerushalayim, they wanted to offer to help build financially, pledge towards the building, the construction of the second base of Mikdash. And Ezra's response was a very flat no. Lo lachem v'lanu livnos beis leilokeinu. It's not for you and us, meaning no contributions from you who are not Jewish to build the base Elokeinu. So the Gemara takes from here that you can't outside Neder Nadava, you can't take any monies from them. Okay, gets into a interesting and, you know, it could understandably be a heated discussion of whether any contributions from a non-Jew can be accepted. But right now, with the Mishnah says that they cannot contribute towards the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, we're on the top now of Daf Dalet. Now, even though we're in the same Mishnah, we are now switching gears.
Did
Shlomo get
help from?
The wood was supplied, right? He imported the wood, but it could very well be that he paid for it. So that could, in other words, it's not, they certainly, supplies can come from out, but in other words, the Gemara here is talking about the monies, the donations. Okay, now we're in the same Mishnah, but the truth of the matter is now we're changing gears. Okay, the mitzvah is to give a machzis a shekel, right? That we understand. But now what we're going to be discussing is the following. First of all, let me resolve a confusion which we're going to hopefully avoid altogether. And that is that the Torah says that there's a requirement for us to give a machzis a shekel, a half of a shekel. Now, over the course of the years, of the generations, the centuries, what ends up happening is that, you know, names change, even though the money, the currency is still the same. In the times of the Mishnah, whenever they're going to be describing the shekel is called a sela. Okay, so just have it in your head that you're going to see the word sela come up in the Mishnah, it's in the Gemara. A sela is equal to a shekel. Okay, so And now here's where it gets confusing. So forgive the Mishnah for being confusing. It's just once you know this one little detail, you're good to go. In the time of the Mishnah, so the machetzis a shekel was a coin, and it was called a shekel. Okay? So when we're reading about a shekel in the Mishnah, what we're really saying is machetzis a shekel. I know that's confusing, so as long as we get that clear from the very beginning, we're going to be good. And if the Mishnah wants to describe the shekel of the Torah, the Mishnah uses the term sela. Okay, so far so good. Now, there's a mitzvah for everyone to give a machetzis a shekel. Every Jew to give a machetzis a shekel. Okay, some Jews more obligated than others, but fine. In addition to that, there is a little surcharge. Okay, we all are familiar with surcharges. We get it all the time. You go to a restaurant, you're hit with a surcharge. You go everywhere, right? You look at any bill that you receive in, there's a surcharge. So in the machetzis a shekel, there's a surcharge as well. That surcharge is called a kalbone. Okay, the etymology of the word, I don't know. I should, but unfamiliar with where that word comes from. But the kalbone is just simply a surcharge. Why is there a surcharge to the machetzis a shekel? So it's not clear from the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't give any reason behind the surcharge. And if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. Meaning, the Torah is very clear about what you need to give to the Beit HaMikdash. You need to give a machetzis a shekel. So why would there be a surcharge to begin with? Not clear. But what we're going to see over the course of the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, is that there are this is a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. The Tanaim are already arguing about why there would be a surcharge. Let's start off with the position of the Tanakama. I'll just say it outside, and then we're going to see it inside. Let's start off with the position of the Tanakama. Tanakama says it's financial. It's strictly financial, meaning that the only reason why a surcharge is being collected is because we don't want the Beis HaMikdash to lose. Why would they lose? So Ben and I, makes sense, two Bens, Ben and I are going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and we're going to give a machzis a shekel. Okay, but I'm going to come with my machzis a shekel, he's going to come with his, and we say to each other, you know what? Why don't we do the following? Okay, I'll give a sela. Ben, later in the month, later in the year, you'll repay me. Fine. And that one sela, which is equivalent to two machetzis shekels, so that one sela will satisfy both of our obligations. Possibly, the Beis HaMikdash just lost a little bit of money. Why? Because that sela has to now be broken down into machetzis shekels. Now, it doesn't have to be, but chances are that it will. The machetzis shekel in the month of Adar is in high demand. So it's in high demand, so its value is going to be a little bit more. I know we're talking about currency, but still currencies are obviously fluctuate in terms of their value. And especially with, we deal with paper money nowadays, so it's hard for us to fully fathom, but back then, the currency, the value of the currency was very predicated on the metal content in the currency. So if the two of us, instead of giving two machetzis a shekel, we give one sela, so basically now what the Beis HaMikdash received, instead of two halves, and those two halves have a little extra value because of the high demand at that time of year, so instead we gave one sela. So there's a possible loss to the Beis HaMikdash if the two of us combine to give one sela. So to defray that, so what the Beis HaMikdash is going to ask us now for is a small surcharge. And that small surcharge is a kalbone. Okay, but if I give a machzis a shekel and Ben gave a machzis a shekel, so then we're good. So then there's no need for a surcharge because we gave the Beis HaMikdash exactly what it needed or what we're required to give it, and that is the actual machzis a shekel. So for the Tanakhama's standpoint, the explanation, the reason why there's a surcharge is the financial reason, simply because we won't want the Beis HaMikdash to lose out. That's one possibility. Another possibility, which we're going to see in just a moment, is that no, it's not a financial cause. It just simply is so. Meaning, it could even be that this is a din d'oraisa. Now, later on we'll see. Where's that source from? What is that based on? But it could just very well be that it's a din d'oraisa. Every single person that gives a machzis a shekel has to provide a surcharge. Period. And so, therefore, even if Ben and I contribute, I'll get to that point in just a moment. So even if I myself gave a machzis a shekel, I also have to contribute the surcharge of the kalbon. Okay, and that is, we'll see in a moment, is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So what we have in front of us are basically, amongst the Tanayim, two opinions in terms of why I'm giving the surcharge. Either it's a financial, we simply don't want the Beis HaMikdash to lose, or it's a din d'oraisa. Just simply, the Torah says so. What's the practical difference? So now we're going to go to, again, Ben and I combining our monies. So Ben and I now, instead of giving two machzes a shekel, we're going to give a full sela. If it's a financial concern, so how many surcharges do we need to give? So the Mishnah is going to tell us only one surcharge. Because all we're doing is just simply defraying the cost of taking that sela and separating it into two machzes a shekel. And the two machzes a shekels have a slightly greater value than the one sela because of the high demand. So therefore, we only need to give one kalbon. If, however, you go like Rebbe Meir, that every single person needs to provide the surcharge, regardless of, it's not a financial consideration. So then, even if Ben and I give a sela to the Beis HaMikdash, so how many kalbons do we need to give? We need to give two, not one. So that you'll see, as we go through the Mishnah, is a basic machlokas. Let's see the Mishnah inside for all this. The Eilu Shechayavim Bekalbon. Here are the people who are obligated to give the kalbon. Levim v'Yisraelim v'gerim v'avadim v'shucharim. Again, same list. Avalo kohanim v'nashim v'avadim v'ketanim. Not kohanim, not women, not avadim, not ketanim. Meaning, so this surcharge is only for those people who are obligated. Now it's interesting, because we learned in the previous Mishnah that according to Rav Yochanan and Zakkai, the kohen is obligated to give. It's not just a voluntary gift on behalf of the kohen. So our Mishnah over here, it's interesting, needs more analysis in terms of why our Mishnah says that the Kohen doesn't have to give the Kalbon. Hashoka ayide Kohen ayide Isha ayide Eved ayide Katan Pater. If you are sponsoring somebody else's Machitzis HaShekel, you don't have to pay the Kalbon, you don't have to pay the surcharge. V'im Shakel ayidova ayide Chavero Chayv B'Kalbon. However, if I'm paying for me and I'm paying for somebody else, so then I'm obligated to give the Kalbon. I'm sorry, Chai B'Kalbon Echad. Rabbi Meir Omer, Beis Kalbonos. Here it is. Here's where the Mishnah says the difference between the Tanakhama versus Rabbi Meir. Tanakhama says if I give one sela, one Kalbon, because it's just to defray the possible loss to the Beis HaMikdash. According to Rabbi Meir, if we are giving one sela, two Kalbons. Because the Kalbon for Rabbi Meir is not a financial, move, but rather it's just simply the Torah obligates every single person to provide the surcharge. According to Rabbi Meir, if I give a half shekel, I got to give a kalbon. According to the Tanakhama, no, I don't. In other words, it's strictly, according to the Tanakhama, it's strictly a financial explanation.
Right.
Correct. No, that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. Meaning that according to the Tanakhama, if two people are giving a sela, so then they have to provide the kalbon to defray any possible loss. And according to Rav Meir, no, each person has to still give a kalbon. Hanosein sela v'notel shekel chayev shnei kalbonos. If you give a sela and you get a shekel in exchange for that. Now again, remember, sela is a full shekel. A shekel of the Mishnah is a half a shekel. Okay? I know. It can get confusing, but once you know that, you're good. So, a nosin sela, so if you give a full sela, and you get a shekel in response, so you're chayef two kabanas, you're chayef to give two kabanas. Now, is this line of the Mishnah going like Rabbi Meir? Or is it even going like the Chachamim? Sounds like Rabbi Meir. And even if it's going like Rabbi Meir, it's still hard to understand. Because what was that exchange? I gave a full sela, which means that I'm paying for my... I'm paying for my machatzis shekel obligation. I'm getting change. The change is a machatzis shekel, or the Mishnah's terminology is a shekel. So why we have to pay two kalbonos? It's difficult. That's difficult to understand. Meaning, even according to Rabbi Meir, because it sounds like I'm only paying one obligation. Okay. Yeah. Right. So it's difficult. It's that part of the Mishnah is difficult. Hashoka ayad ani v'ayad shchena v'ayad ben iro pater. Any sponsorship, anytime you're paying on behalf of somebody else, you're waive the surcharge. The imhilvan chayev, however, if you're not paying for them, you're just lending them the money. So that's, in other words, that's not a sponsorship. That's a loan, and therefore you're chayev in the kalbon. Ha'achin ashutvin shechayevim bekalbon peturim in meiser behema ukishechayevim meiser behema peturim min ha'kalbon. Let's say, who's paying for you? The estate. Meaning, dad died, dad left an estate, and now the estate is paying for you. So, basically, it's a question of when it's the estate's money versus when it's your money. Once the estate gets divided amongst the brothers, it's your money. But when the estate is just the estate, so then that's the estate's money sponsoring and paying for you. And basically what the Mishnah says is that if it's the estate's paying for you, that sponsorship, you don't have to pay kalba. Once the estate gets divided, that's you paying, and now you have to pay the kalba. And by the way, the Mishnah points out, opposite from Meiser Behema. Meaning for Meiser Behema, the halacha is that if it's one entity owning the animals, there's an obligation for Meiser Behema. If it's multiple partners owning the animal, then there's no obligation on Meiser Behema. So it's going to be the same distinction between when it's an estate versus when the monies were divided amongst the brothers. So, but it's just going to be the opposite. Meaning, in the world of Machitz it's a shekel. The estate sponsoring, exempt from Kalbon. In the world of Meiser Behema, when it's the estate's animals, they're obligated to Meiser Behema because it's not a partnership. It's an estate. Once the monies get divided by the brothers, so then for Machitz it's a shekel, you are officially on the hook because that's not estate paying you, that's your money. In terms of Meiser Behema, you are now, and the animals are owned by the brothers and the brothers are forming a partnership, so then there's an exemption from Meiser Behema. What, by the way, why should that be that? If there's a partnership over animals, an exemption from Meiser Behema. So we discussed that all the way back in Bechoros. Kamahu Kalbon. And finally, how much? How much are we talking about in terms of a start charge? So Ma'al Kesef Div Rebbe Meir, V'chachamim Omrim Chatzi Ma'al. So one Ma'al, according to Rebbe Meir, and according to the Chachamim, a half of that amount. A Ma'al is a 12th of a machitz is a shekel, which would be a 24th of a full shekel. So according to Rabbi Meir, it's basically a 4% surcharge. And according to the Chachamim, no, half of that. It's basically a 2% surcharge. So, no, in other words, everyone has to give a machitz a shekel. And every single person. It just the distinction the Mishnah is making is if it's in other words, even if we're a partnership over any type of venture, I'm obligated, you're obligated. However, if we're being sponsored by somebody, so then there's no surcharge cost. So what the Gemara was saying is that if there's simply an estate and it hasn't been divided yet, that's considered sponsorship. That's not considered you and I paying the monies. Alpha Pishamru, let's go through some Gemara today. Alpha Pishamru v'chule, halit bo ein tovim. Hacha atamar tovim v'hacha atamar ein tovim. So the Gemara over here goes back to the minor, and the Gemara is confused. The minor gives, the minor doesn't give. I don't know, so from the previous Mishnah, it sounds like, well, we don't take a mashkon. Well, that means that they have to pay. Our Mishnah says, we don't even toveya. So the Gemara says, "Kan kashevi beisaros, kan shelo hevi beisaros." Again, we go back to the distinction that we made earlier. Under 13 years of age, so then there's no, then there's not even a tviya. There's not even a request. Once you're over 13 years of age, so then there's a tviya. Then there's a request. Okay. Hanachri v'akusi amar Rabbi ba tipater kaman damar kusi kanachri ti itpalginan kusi. I'm sorry. Before I go on, tipater kaman damar kusi kanachri. Our Mishnah says that when it comes to the kusi, so he has no obligation to give the machitz a shekel. Now, quick history lesson, 30-second history lesson. Who are the kusim? Melech Asher, Sancheriv Melech Asher, when he took the 10 tribes and displaced them from the northern kingdom. Historians have it at the year 711 before the Common Era. Whatever the case is, so when they were taken out, so they were replaced with a group of non-Jews from the town of Kusa. Kusa happens to be out in Bavel. So in other words, you had basically Babylonians, not Jewish ones, non-Jewish ones, who moved to the northern kingdom. They were living in Eretz Yisrael, practicing their idolatry, attacked by lions, right? In other words, Eretz Yisrael can simply not tolerate idolatry, and so therefore they converted. Debated for centuries throughout the Mishnah, throughout the Gemara, debated for centuries whether it was a good conversion or not. And basically the question on the table is, How are they status-wise? Are they considered Jews or not? Converts, or are they not considered converts? So the terminology the Gemara uses, not here, but in the Bavli, is Gerei Emes versus Gerei Arayos. Converted because they were sincere, or Gerei Arayos, converted because of the Ari. Okay? So, Tipatik Amandar Kusi Kenachri de It Palgin. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah is going to be Kusi, is Kenachri. Right, which by the way, makes perfect sense, because our Mishnah says they're not obligated to give. Well, why are they obligated to give? Because they're not Jewish. So, and the Gemara points out, this is a machlokas. Kusi kenachri, divri rebbi, reshim gamliel amr kusi ki yisroel. Lechol davar. Okay. Machlokas over here. This is a machlokas in rebbi and reshim and gamliel. So you're talking about late Tanaim who are arguing about this. Even though historically the Kusi was in Israel at that point in time for hundreds of years, going back to the first temple, and Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel are living after the second temple. So this has been a debate that just happened for centuries. So Kusi Kenachri Devar Rebbe Rebbe Shimon Gamliel Kusi Kisrael L'chol Davar Amar Rebbe Lazar Masisin Ben Achrim Habakusim Lo Uvtzni, and we learned in a Braisa Kain Adam. Larabos, I'm sorry. Utani Kane, sorry. Adam Larabos is Agerim. Mikem Lahotzias Amumrim. That when the Torah describes in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra, that a person brings a carbon, it says Adam. Adam is to include even Gerim. And it says Mikem. Mikem means some of you, not all of you. If you're a mummer, you cannot bring a carbon. So, fine. So that is the opinion of Rebbe Elazar. Good. We'll pause over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Okay, so essentially now, just quick summary. We started with the Mishnah on Gimel Amud Beis, the top Mishnah. We talk about the Shulchan Aruch. As we move now towards Nisan, the agencies get more and more serious about collection. You're on the 25th day of Adar, they're already taking a Mashkon. They're taking a Mashkon from anyone who's obligated. Anyone who's not obligated, they don't take a Mashkon. Kohanim, are they obligated to give? Debatable. Although Rav Yochanan Zakkai says they absolutely have to give, there's no question. Then we moved on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about the voluntary machitzis shekel. Women, minors, can volunteer to give the machitzis shekel if they want to, but when our Mishnah says minor, by the way, our Mishnah is talking about the ages between 13 and 20, as the Gemara pointed out. And then finally we ended up, and contributions from a non-Jew. The Mishnah says no, although you'll see over the course of tomorrow morning, we will discuss more about whether or not we can accept any type of contribution from a non-Jew. And finally, the last big topic that we discussed today was the Kalav on the surcharge, where the Tanaim argue what exactly is the purpose of the surcharge. Either A, possibly to defray any potential loss to the Beis HaMikdash, that's the Tanakama's position, so that means according to the Tanakama, if I give a machitzis a shekel, there's no need for a surcharge. Or no, the Reb Meir's position is that every Jew has to just simply include a surcharge in the machitzis a shekel, and that means then that every Jew is going to have to give not only machitzis a shekel, but also the surcharge as well. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.